The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark.
Glory to you, O Lord.
James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." He replied, "What do you wish me to do for you?" They answered him, "Grant that in your glory we may sit, one at your right and the other at your left." Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Can you drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" They said to him, "We can." Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right or at my left is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." When the 10 heard this, they became indignant at James and John. Jesus summoned them and said to them, "You know that those who are recognized as rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones make their authority over them felt. But it shall not be so among you. Rather, whoever wishes to be great among you will be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first among you will be the slave of all. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." The Gospel of the Lord. So now I'm very aware that I suppose as I get older and I read the Gospels, and one that I have read many times before, it's wonderful when you discover that you get a new insight into things. You know, maybe I never really saw that before, and so when I was thinking about the gospel in the Mass today, I began thinking along the lines, apropos of the second reading and what we read or you heard read in the gospel today, I began along the lines of, I went back to 1958 in my life. In 1958, I finished high school. I wasn't quite yet 18 years of age. And then in September of that year, in 1958, in fact, on the 6th of September, I went into the seminary to be a priest. And unfortunately, on that day, I met a guy called Clem Connolly, but that's another story. We won't go there. Anyhow, so I got used to seminary life, and it was a very, I suppose, unreal kind of life. You began doing things like studying Greek and Latin and philosophy and epistemology and logic, and then 4 years of theology. And here I was, 19, 20, 21, 22, and so on. And I was looked after in every way. I never had to worry about, you know, where things came from or paying a bill or where would the next meal come from. And so I went along that way for 6 years or more. And then the day came on the 14th of June, 1964, I was ordained and I began my life as a priest. And even while I was in the seminary, when I'd go home on vacation, people began to treat me differently because I was going to be a priest. And then when I was ordained a priest, people took a totally different approach to me. Now you're a priest. So yes, Father, no, Father, what can I do for you, Father? And so you got into that culture. And that's where I think that you've heard the Holy Father, hopefully, talking about the culture of clericalism in the church. And can you see where it begins? And so you come out, and there you are as a young priest. And again, I ended up in my first parish, had a parish priest who was very helpful towards me and taught me a lot of things that I didn't know and I needed to be told. And again, I never had to worry about where the next meal came from or paying a mortgage or even paying a bill. Now, has anybody here, you, who live, have you ever been through a life like that? No, you haven't. And so that was the training. That was the training you got. Now, can you see what that's leading to? Now we go back to the second reading in the Mass today and the Gospel. And here we have James and John. They, like a lot of priests, have this right feel to have an entitlement. So James and John come and they say, Lord, we want you to do something for us. I'd like to sit on your right and I'd like to be on your left when you come into your glory. And see, and right away, what did Jesus say? Right, boys, leave it to me, I'll sort that out for you. No. He asked him a question. He said, can you drink the cup that I drink? What did Jesus mean? Well, you get a clue in the second reading. We have a great high priest who has sympathy for all our weaknesses. A great high priest who has been through suffering and pain. And I think I might have been ordained officially by the bishop on the 14th of June, 1964. But I don't think I was ordained until I went through my own suffering. And that is true to any of us. For some unknown reason, we're kind of hardwired to avoid any kind of suffering or pain in our lives. And it was only when I was put to the end of my endurance and was down there that I had to do something about it. And by coming through that, that was my ordination. Because now I was fit to be a priest, to be able to help people. Because until then, all I had was textbook things, a bit of philosophy, a bit of theology. But that was useless, absolutely useless, when I met people facing tragedy and problems and difficulties in their life It was absolutely useless. And so I can say to you today, to all of us, because you too are disciples and followers of Jesus, until you go through some personal trauma in your life and suffering and pain and loss, you're never going to understand the gospel. You're never going to be able to really help anybody. And so when Jesus says to the James and John, and they glibly answered, "Oh, we can you drink the cup that I am going to drink?" What was that cup? The cup of rejection, the cup of loneliness, the cup of maybe depression, the cup of the dark night of the soul, the cup of being at a crossroads in your life. Until you drink that cup, you're going to be no good to anybody. He said that to me, and he also said it to you. And that's something very, 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 very important to realize that. And so all my life, thankfully, from many, many years ago, I've been telling people, because they still do it, people are very kind to you, they're very nice to you, as most of you are, and people will occasionally, if I say, "Oh, I'm not, you know, I have some difficulty or some problem," "Oh, but you're a priest." No, I'm not. I'm a man who happens to be a priest. That's very important to realize. And any weakness that you have, any difficulty that you have, I have too in my life in dealing with the problems of life. And all through life, it's difficult sometimes to cope with that. Now a simple little story helps. Back when I was in England and in the parish there, and that's, he's only one of many, when I'd go down to the local barber to have my hair cut, he'd always say, and I'd go to pay him, he'd say, oh no, Father, that's okay. You would do a lot for us, so there's no need to pay. So, sorry about that. That's God. Yeah. Trying to scare the wits out of you. Yeah. So don't worry. No, it's okay. So, where was I? I was at the barber's, right. There's a little story about that, actually. A priest went to the barber's and he went to pay for the haircut, and the barber said to him, "Oh, no, Father," he said, "because you do so much for us, that's okay." So next day, when the barber came along to open his barber shop, he found a thank you note from the priest and a mass card where the priest said, "I'll offer a mass for you." Ah, the barber was very happy about that. A week later, a police officer comes in to have a haircut, and the barber says to the police officer, "Oh, officer," he said, "you do a lot for us. No need to pay. You're a public servant. You can have a free haircut." And so next day, when he goes to open up the store, there's a lovely thank you note from the police officer and 12 donuts. A couple of weeks later, a politician goes into the barber's. Oh, hell. Yep. And he has a haircut, and the barber says, "You do a lot," he said, "for us and for the local community, so you can have a free haircut." And next morning, when the barber goes along to open his shop, there's 12 politicians lined up outside the door. That's the way it goes. So you and I, to conclude, we have to look at our own lives. And you're never really going to experience joy until you go through some kind of pain and suffering. It's absolutely essential. Essential. And so I want to finish with a little question, and I want you to take this away in your mind and think about it. When you're faced with some unexpected difficulty in your life, you may go to the doctor and he has bad news for you. Maybe he diagnoses that you have cancer or you have some other illness that's going to really affect your life. You have a choice. You have a choice. You can either react or you can respond. That's the secret. If you react, you make it much, much more difficult. I've discovered that in my life. But if you respond, and if you have the ability, because God will give you this ability, to suddenly see this particular pain, this rejection, this failure, this loneliness, God has a treasure in that for me. God is offering me a treasure, a gift. And that's what happens when you respond. And you come out the other side, and now you know what joy is. And you're no good to anybody. You don't understand the gospel until that happens in your life. And so for me personally, when people come to visit me and they have some particular problem or difficulty, and maybe I'm able to say to this particular person, you know what you've just told me? You've told me the story of my life. And suddenly that person looks up with a smile on their face. Really? But Father, you're a priest. No, I'm a person. I'm a human being. I'm a man. I know how you feel. That person transforms in front of your eyes. So let's stand and pray.